The following audio is brought to you by Summerside Community Church in London, Ontario. For more information on Summerside, visit us online at www.summersidechurch.ca.
Well, I think we're back in the book of Exodus. Exodus, and I invite you to turn to Exodus. We're actually going to be looking at Exodus 7, but you can start in Exodus 5. I think it's a little ironic that Pastor Devin is down in Florida, enjoying the beach with his kids, laying out in the sun in the warm weather, and he's leaving us to deal with the plagues. And today, apparently, we've got one of the plagues coming. You know, we got the ice coming. You know, but really, when you think about it, we think we have it bad sometimes, but I don't think any of us have experienced anything close to one of the 10 plagues. Now, maybe some of you who have come from other countries, and we have people from a lot of different, that have lived in other countries in the world, maybe you've had something that has come close to it, but I suspect for most of us, even if you were asked to define what is a plague, you'd have to think, stop and think, because, you know, we use it fairly loosely. You know, we talk about a plague of mosquitoes, you know, a plague of flies. We talk about the flu, is like a plague this year, and we use this fairly loosely. And I looked up. I was a little curious to see what the plague actually means, and there are actually two definitions. One is that it's a contagious disease that spreads rapidly and kills many people, and we normally think of the bubonic plague. And in fact, there's a chart. It's still around today, and in different parts of the world, they deal with it, keeps showing up, this disease, but nothing like the millions and millions of people that died in history when the plague came through, and they didn't know what to do with it, and they didn't even understand it. And at one point in Europe, a third of the population was killed with the plague. So that's one aspect of the plague. The second definition of the plague is that it's an unusually large number of insects or animals infesting a place and causing damage. And we normally think of, if you say, what's a plague of animals or insects, you would normally think of locusts, right? It's still a problem in the world. Every once in a while you hear about the locusts that come across very often in North Africa or sometimes around the other place in the Middle East. So these are plagues, and so we don't understand what that's like. Because when we say, you know, my house is plagued with ants, this means I've got a bunch of ants and I got to deal with them, right? But we don't understand the horror of it. Now, at this point, some of you are probably thinking, wow, I can remember some tough times I lived through, but I'm sure it wasn't as bad as this. Now, when you think about the 10 plagues, they weren't all equally as equally painful. In fact, there's a sense in which they keep getting worse and worse and worse. And in Egypt, when this happened, it's important to notice that when Moses records this event, he gives us some detail, not a lot of detail, but he does give us some detail. And the question is, why? Why does God record the details of the plagues? Because he could have, if he wanted to, said, okay, I want my people to go from Egypt to the promised land, boom, they disappear in one place and appear in the promised land and everything's wonderful, right? God could have done that. Or Moses could have said, God sent 10 plagues on Egypt and it changed Pharaoh's heart and he let the people go and they left. But he didn't. He goes into detail. In fact, 5 chapters of details and a lot of repetition about these plagues. So what's the point? What is it that God is trying to tell us, because this is scripture for us, and what was God trying to tell the Israelites in going through this long, drawn-out process of these 10 plagues so that, why was he trying to communicate that when he could have done it in another way? Well, if this is God's book, then we know that there are no wasted words in here. And so we need to understand why. And to start with that, you need to look at Exodus chapter 5. We've already looked at this passage, but here is a key statement. And there are several key statements throughout the 10 plagues that help us understand why. And here's the first one, Exodus 5 verse 2. Pharaoh said. Remember when Moses approached Pharaoh and he said, God said, let my people go. This is what Pharaoh says. Pharaoh said, who is the Lord that I should obey him and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go. That, my friends, is the key to understanding the significance of the plagues. Because Pharaoh is saying, who's the Lord? Who is he that I should obey him? And the whole drawn out plagues that we see is God answering the question, Pharaoh, you want to know who the Lord is? Let me show you who the Lord is. So we're going to go through, over the next 2 weeks, we're going to go through the plagues. I'm just going to deal with the first four today, the next six the next week. So that we can stop and think, what is it that God is trying to explain to us? God is demonstrating to us about himself from these plagues. Now, the key question, this key question that Pharaoh asks is interesting because right after this, remember what happens? Pharaoh says, go and make bricks without straw, and all of a sudden things get worse for the people. And Moses goes back to God and says, God, what are you doing? Things are supposed to get better and things are just getting worse. You know, what have you done? And what does God remind him of in chapter 6, verse 2? He says, I am the Lord. And he reminds them of that time when he stood at the burning bush. And at the burning bush, he heard the voice. And he said to God, when he was confronting God in the burning bush, he's saying, God, who am I supposed to say sent me to go to Pharaoh? And he says, I am that I am. I will be who I will be. And he says, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. He is the one that you need to listen to. He is the one that you need to obey. And he's helping them to understand that that's who he is. So the primary purpose of the plagues is not to get Israel out of Egypt. That's important to understand. That is not the primary purpose. Now, that's ultimately what happened. But God could have done it a lot easier. Right? There were simpler ways of God taking the people from Egypt to Israel, but God had a bigger plan. And let's look at the plagues and notice what God is revealing about himself through them. Now, we usually talk about the 10 plagues, but actually they're referred to as signs. Now, they are called plagues. I'm not saying you shouldn't call them 10 plagues, but they're actually signs. In fact, in Exodus 7, verse 3, God calls them signs and wonders. He says, I'm going to display my signs and wonders through these events. 10 of them are plagues, but the first one is not. The first one is simply a sign, and it's the sign of the snake. The sign of the snake in verses 8 through 13. Remember, Moses and Aaron appear before Pharaoh. And God had given them this sign. He said, I want you to take the staff, throw it down, it's going to become a snake. And when we looked at that, when God first told them to do that, we pointed out that King Tut, you remember King Tut's mask that archaeologists have found, has the snake head? Because the snake was the symbol of authority and power in Egypt. And so Moses comes along and Aaron takes the rod, throws it down, it becomes a serpent, to sort of point out to Pharaoh, this, you think you have authority because you are the one that thinks the serpent gives you that symbol of authority. Let me show you who has true authority. Pharaoh calls his magicians in, right? And they do the same thing. Now, how did they do the stuff they did, by the way? Well, there are only one of two options. Either they were good tricksters, which is a possibility because magicians, you know, we know magicians today can do all kinds of amazing things, make things appear, disappear, and it's like, whoa, how did that ever happen? I can't believe that. So they may have been able to do that, and there's, you know, evidence that you could control snakes in a certain way. Or they could have been operating under supernatural power. They could have been operating under demonic influence, and there are people today, you may not be aware of this, but around the world, Satan is working through people using his demonic power to do miracles. I mean, it happened in Brazil when I was growing up. I knew about situations. And it happens around the world. And we're not sure. We're not told which is which. But anyways, they're able somehow to imitate what Aaron does when he throws down the rod and it becomes a serpent. And I'm sure Pharaoh had a bit of a smile on his face when his magicians did that. But as he's watching, all of a sudden Aaron's snake eats the other snakes. And it's like, oh, you know what that would have been like? It would have been like walking into the Oval Office of the White House with a beautiful bald eagle and wringing its neck. It's like, can you imagine what that would communicate to the President of the United States? Well, that's exactly what's happening here. He's saying, you, this symbol of authority that you have, God can eat it right up. And look what he's doing. And Pharaoh, of course, isn't too excited about that because his heart is hard. He doesn't want to listen. And so the next thing God does is he gives him the second sign, which is the first plague. And God starts out easy. And so Moses and Aaron meet Pharaoh down by the river in the morning. And as we mentioned before, when Pharaoh's daughter was down by the river, it wasn't because they didn't have baths in the palace, but it was a part of their worship. They would go down to the river because the river was sacred. So we assume he was going there to worship. And Moses approaches him and he says, you need to let my people go. And Pharaoh says no. And in chapter 7, verse 17, this is what the Lord says. By this, you will know that I am the Lord. With the staff that is in my hand, I will strike the water of the Nile and it will be changed into blood. Moses raises his staff. They strike the water. It changes to blood. Now, you don't need to be asking the question, was it animal blood or human blood? Because the word blood in Hebrew is also used for a color, the color blood. You know, they talk about the moon turned to blood. It wasn't like the moon turned to physical dripping blood. It turned red like blood. And so this water was red like blood. We're not sure what it was. But in any case, it stunk. It caused the fish to die. It caused all kinds of problems. Even the water that was in storage had turned to this blood color or whatever it was. And it caused a huge problem, but the magicians were able to somehow replicate the same thing with their magic. Now, the reason why this wasn't as bad as the other ones is because we're told that they could dig by the river and find fresh water. So they were able to get some fresh water. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a horrible, it was a bad situation, but it wasn't horrible. It was bearable. They were able to deal with it. It was manageable. And Pharaoh said, I don't care, I am still refusing. And in verse 25 of chapter 7, it says, 7 days passed after the Lord struck the Nile. This little statement, some commentators indicate that this is it's a literary device to sort of indicate this is what happened between each plague. It's quite possible, we don't know for sure, because there aren't a lot of time indicators in this in the story. And it could be that there were 7 days between each plague and it would happen. The next one would happen. So 7 days go. And it's the more interesting thing here is not that the water was undrinkable. The interesting thing here is that the Egyptian god of the Nile, one of the main gods of the Nile, was called Hapi, H-A-P-I. And for Pharaoh to be worshiping at the Nile and for the Nile to be destroyed. The Nile was the source of life. The Nile was what determined whether they had crops or not. The Nile was the thing. The god Hapi was the one who provided life. It was the source of life, but now it was the source of death. And God was saying something very significant to Pharaoh. Pharaoh, you're asking the question, who is the Lord that I should obey him? The Lord is not Hapi. And the Lord is not happy, right? It's like, he is not happy with what's going on. And he's letting you know that the Lord God is the Lord, the God of Israel, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And you need to submit to him. And 7 days later, things calm down and Pharaoh is hoping things have settled down and the water has apparently cleared. And Moses confronts him again. And now he brings on the frogs, plague number two. Aaron stretches out his hands and frogs invade the land. Now, Faith and I, when we were just after seminary, we took a team to Brazil, missions team. And one of the houses we stayed at in the Northeast, we stayed with a couple. And when they took us to the room where we were supposed to sleep, the lady had to bring in a broom and sweep out the frogs. Like, there were like three or four frogs. Faith was not feeling too comfortable about the situation. And then once she got those out, we, you know, sort of said goodnight. And I went into the bathroom and had to call the lady back because she had to get the frogs out of the shower, too. It's like... But that was nothing compared to what they were dealing with. I mean, can you imagine rolling over in the middle of the night and realizing it's not your wife's cold feet that you're feeling on your back? It's a slimy frog. And you wake up in the morning and you go into the shower and there are frogs there. And you open the cupboard to make your pancakes and a frog jumps out. And you say, forget that, I'm going to warm up a bagel. You open up your toaster oven and a frog jumps out. It's like, it would just... shivers thinking about it. Frogs everywhere. Somehow the magicians are able to somehow make frogs appear. But it's interesting, they can make them appear, but they couldn't make them disappear, right? So Pharaoh has to call Moses. Say, Moses, chapter 8, verse 8, pray to the Lord to take the frogs away from me and my people, and I will let you go and offer your sacrifice to the Lord. Finally, it seems like Pharaoh is coming around. And Moses says, okay, you set the time when you want the frogs to go. Why would he do that? He wants them to understand that these frogs aren't going to go away just naturally, right? Because if they did, if Moses just said, okay, they're going to go away, then Pharaoh would think, oh yeah, it's just naturally they would just all die off. And he says, you tell me when, and I'll take care of it. So he says, tomorrow. And Moses, the interesting thing is, Moses goes and he prays. Isn't that neat? Here, Moses, the one whom God has given this incredible ability and authority to do these miracles, is crying out to God, God, it's time to let this plague pass. And he's praying. And he cares. And he's praying, God, recognizing he's totally dependent upon God. No matter what abilities he thinks he may have on his own, he is totally dependent upon God. And it's a good challenge for each of us. So the next day, all the frogs die, and as the stink of the dying frogs is still in the air, Pharaoh probably looks out and says, things are getting better. And he hardens his heart, and he tells Moses, I'm not going to let you go. And he refuses. Plague number 3, bring on the gnats. Presumably, 7 days later, without announcing this time, Aaron strikes the dust of the ground and across the whole nation. It's described as the dust turns into gnats. And in fact, one of the statements in here, it says, all the dust became gnats. I think it's a Hebrew way of saying there were a gazillion gnats. You know, it's like there were gnats everywhere. Everything was gnat. Now, the question is, what's a gnat? Anybody seen a gnat? I don't know. And the Hebrew word here is only used in this context. And the King James Version used the word lice. But a lot of Hebrew scholars think it's probably some kind of a winged biting insect. Some people think it's a mosquito. Personally, I think it was a black fly. Okay, because I've been in Muskoka in black fly season. And it's like, oh, I just can't imagine. So it was some kind of a biting, disturbing insect that was just destroying them. And the magicians try to imitate what they did, which would be a challenge. Because if there are gnats swarming everywhere, how can you claim you made a whole bunch of gnats appear when they're already there? You know, it's like, and in fact, what happens is that the magicians give up. They say, we can't do this. In fact, what they say, they tell Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. That's a way of saying what is happening here is not human. This is definitely God that's doing something. You need to recognize that this is beyond our ability. This is something that we cannot deal with. And Pharaoh still does not listen. And so God has to crank up the pressure again. And he tells Moses to meet Pharaoh down at the river again. And I can imagine Pharaoh's down at the river doing whatever he's doing there. And he sees Moses and he thinks, oh no, not again. And Moses comes along and he says, Pharaoh, do you want to know who the Lord is that you should obey him? Flies are going to swarm across the land. And they're going to cover the ground. Can you imagine? Everywhere you step, you're stepping on flies and squishing them. And it's like just... And some people suggest these were in Egypt. They probably would have been those biting flies. Like those little flies, stable flies, or, you know, that you get in the... Like all of a sudden say, what? How come I'm getting bit by these flies? It would have been very disturbing. In fact, it's described is that the land was ruined by the flies. Okay, it's hard for us to... And I don't want to spend too much time trying to gross you out, okay? I mean, it's probably not going to help too much. I thought about showing pictures. That would have been just sensationalizing it all. But it's hard for us to imagine how difficult it would have been. But God just makes it so difficult that Pharaoh says, go, sacrifice, but stay in the land. And Moses says, uh-uh, it's not going to happen. We have to go at least 3 days' journey into the wilderness to worship. And the reason why he gives there, he says, some of the Egyptians will be upset with us. I'm not sure what's going on there, what that means, but Moses obviously understood that. And so then he says, fine. And then again, Pharaoh says, pray for me. It's like he understands that somehow this Moses has some kind of in with this God that he's dealing with. And he's saying, hey, relieve me of this pressure. And God responds after Moses prays and he gets relief. Pharaoh again changes his mind. Now, at this point, I want to stop right there. We've covered the four. We're going to deal with the six next time. We want to stop and ask the question, what is the point of what God is trying to tell them? Pharaoh is asking the question, who is God that I should worship him? Who is the Lord that I should worship him? And not that I should worship him, that I should obey him. And the first thing that, and I just want to look at one of them today, and we'll look at several more next week. But the most significant thing that is showing up here about God that Pharaoh needs to understand and that you and I need to listen very carefully is that the Lord is a revealer. The Lord is a revealer. Now, having said that, some of you are a little disappointed. You say, Mark, I thought you were going to say something to help me deal with those pharaohs in my life. You know, I need to think about God as this one who's going to conquer these people that are bugging me, you know, these people that don't like God and are giving me a hard time, or maybe something to do with this problem I'm dealing with. Like, how does the fact that God is a revealer, like, what is that? How does that affect my everyday life? Well, let me tell you that this is foundational. This concept is foundational to everything we know about God. Because if you don't grasp this concept, you will have a hard time grasping everything else. In fact, you may not be motivated to learn much more about God. And when you think about people in our world who believe in God, even here in Canada, you ask your neighbor who maybe doesn't go to church. Say, do you believe in God? Yeah, most people would. And in fact, statistics show that a majority of Canadians believe in God. What is he like? Well, not really sure. You know, he's probably good. And so when you die, are you going to be with him? Oh, I hope so. Right? People don't know. A majority of people in our world, in fact, a lot of other religions, even the main religions, I mean, you talk to the Muslims or you talk to Hindus or all these different religions, it's like they're worshiping God, and it's like, what's your God like? It's like, when you die, are you going to be with your God? I hope so. I'm not sure. Because what can, you know, how can anybody know? Because they don't understand the true and the living God is a revealer. He is one who is actually revealing himself to the world. And what's he doing to Pharaoh? Pharaoh says, who is the Lord? God says, look, let me show you who I am. Let me display to you my signs and wonders so that you can begin to understand that I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And throughout this event, he is revealing his power and his might and his glory and even his grace. Because he doesn't wipe them out instantly. He gives them an opportunity to respond and repent. He should have struck them down the first time when Pharaoh said no. But he is patient. giving them an opportunity to respond. Well, when you think about God as the revealer, there's a sense in which you think, well, isn't God unknowable? I mean, how can we know anything about God? It's like, he is so far beyond us, we can't know God. And there's a sense in which that is true, that there's that aspect of God, he is so different from us that we can't even know him. We can't begin to know him. Okay, now, there's some aspect of that. But on the other hand, God has revealed himself so that we can know him. So that there is enough for us to know about God, to change our lives, to give us hope, to give us an understanding of what it means to worship him, to express, to live our lives for his glory. Because God, even though he is so far beyond us, he is infinite, he's eternal, and we are so finite and so temporary, we still can know God because he has revealed himself to us. And he has made himself known. And in Exodus 11, verse 9, it says, Pharaoh will refuse to listen to you so that my wonders may be multiplied in Egypt. You see, the plagues were not just for Pharaoh. The plagues for the Israelites too. Which explains somewhat why the first plagues were the ones that affected the Israelites too. They were affected by the water being turned to blood. They were affected by some of the initial ones. The difference was that the last one, which I actually skipped over, actually didn't deal with that, was the fact that the flies, God was making a distinction between the Israelites and the Egyptians. And Pharaoh needed to understand that God can make a distinction between his people and those that he's going to judge. And here he needs to understand that the Israelites were also going to see the wonders of God. And you and I, years later, are going to be able to read this book and understand that God was displaying who he was, displaying his might, his power, his mercy, his glory, and his justice, and his judgment on sin, his judgment on evil, his judgment against those who refused him. And in a few days after this, God is going to reveal to them at the 10th plague that he was making a way for people to not only know who he is, but to have a relationship with him. Because he was providing a lamb that was going to be killed for their sin. And if they killed that lamb and put the blood on their doorpost, the angel of death would pass over their house. They would be set free and they would become God's people. And have a relationship with God. God is a revealer. And then later on, that lamb, we know, later on, would become the one, Jesus himself, who would come and die as our lamb. Jesus, the ultimate revealer of God. The one who revealed more about God than anyone else in history. Than any other revelation that we have. I mean, God reveals himself in nature. He reveals himself in a book. He reveals himself through prophets. But better than anything, he revealed himself through Jesus Christ. And you and I have the privilege of living at a point where we see it so clearly through the person of Jesus Christ. We know the love of God. We know the power of God. We know the mercy and the grace of God. And the question that you and I need to answer is, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to, because there are only two options. You're either going to say, you are the Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and I'm going to obey you because I know who you are. You've revealed yourself to me. I'm going to respond to that revelation. Or are you going to be like Pharaoh and say, no, I don't care. Things are okay. I've got things under control. I'm going to keep going my own way. I don't care what's being revealed to me. My heart is hard. I don't want to listen. So the challenge for you and I as we begin looking through these plagues is, how are we going to respond to the God who reveals himself to us? He has made himself clear. Are we going to listen and are we going to respond?